Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. This week's guest, voice of the Indiana Hoosiers and Hall of Fame announcer Don Fisher, Indianapolis Colts AJ Eads, Jasper Hoops great Slick Weber, Jasper Boys basketball coach John Gable, and DC Broadcasting sports director Kurt Kuksel. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schulteis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. Coach, did you like a little funk at the beginning of the show?
I like that funk, especially on a cold, cold day here in the Midwest. And happy New Year to everybody, but we warmed it up with a little funk, courtesy of Joe's snippets to start the show.
A little funk, you know, thinking back, it takes me back to the late 70s, early 80s of you shooting 30-footers in the varsity games and, you know, things like that.
Well, you know, you were always good about coming up with the defensive steal and kicking it up to me, and I appreciate it. Although I do remember one game when we were playing where I was stealing the ball and you cherry-picked all the time, which I didn't like. But I did get the ball ahead to you. You had more points, but I had more assists, and that may have been one of the few times that happened. And it wasn't on the big stage, folks. It was like a freshman game, so don't want anybody to get too excited. Hey, you know, Joe, we got a great show today. And, you know, the one thing I keep saying, I tell people all the time, you get a little bit local, you get a little bit state, you get a little bit national when you listen to the Coach K and Joe Show. And as you said, we have people from all over the contiguous 48 states and continentally, and we have people around the world, actually, from Brazil and Kuwait, different places.
And
but
Kentucky.
We got Don Fisher, the voice of the Hoosiers, coming on. A.J. Eads, he's right now on the injured reserve list for the Colts, but he has connections to the DuBois County area, the local area. We've got Slick Weber coming on to talk about 100 years of Jasper hoops, and Jasper head basketball coach John Gable. So it's going to be a great, great show.
Yes, it will, and we'll have Kurt Kuksel at the end, as usual, to end in with total chaos with you and him and I going at it on various subjects. But
I think
yeah,
Don Schulteis, our hoops contributor from Indianapolis, has threatened to call in during the rant time as well. So we'll see what's coming up from his end of the state. Joe, I did get a question yesterday. Everybody knows that it's the kickoff this time of year for Girl Scout cookies, and I got a tweet from a gal named Megan, and she's from Evansville, and she says, "Will you and Joe buy Girl Scout cookies from me, and what is your favorite cookie?" Well, Megan, I'll tell you what, I have so many people asking me to buy Girl Scout cookies, I don't know if I'll be able to do that. I put my wife in charge of that, but I like those lemon cookies. I don't know if they even still make them, but I love those lemon cookies. What about you, Joe?
Well, Megan, first of all, I like the peanut butter ones with the chocolate over them. And
oh, those are good.
I'm not in Evansville, so go ahead and get me a couple boxes, and Coach K will pay for them, and I'll pay them back later.
Oh, Joe, I remember that was in the old days, too. Get me a couple hamburgers, he'll pay for them. Megan, I wish you so much luck in all the Girl Scouts out there, the different levels selling those cookies. They're not good for the waist, but they are definitely good on the tongue and going down. And we just wish you a lot of luck. Joe, I don't know if anybody works harder at sales than the Girl Scout troops do.
Yeah, I know. We may need to get some Girl Scouts to help sell the Coach K and Joe Show, because, you know, they'll go door to door and they'll go at it until it's done.
Yeah, I, and Joe, I know you're getting ready to go get our first guest, so you go ahead and do that and let me know when we've got Fisher on the line, and we're excited to have him. I'm just going to touch base on a couple things. I'm sure we'll talk about it at the end of the show as well. We've got the NFL football playoffs coming up, and we have quite a rookie quarterback class, probably not since 1983, when Elway, Kelly, Marino, and current Houston Texan coach Gary Kubiak came out. And, of course, those first three did tremendous things between participating in Super Bowls, winning some, and going into that Hall of Fame. And we've got a great rookie class again this year. You just can't – there's just no way that you can deny what Andrew Luck has done for the Colts, what RG3 has done for Washington. And Mike Shanahan's got to be so happy because at one point I think they were 3-5 or 3-6, and it looked like he could be out of Washington. But they got the ship righted, the team came together, and Washington was able to hold on the other night against penalty and turnover-prone Dallas Cowboys. And I will give Dallas a little credit. They were playing with a lot of non-roster players towards the end of the year as far as when the season started and just trying to stay in it. And then you've got Wilson out at Seattle. That was controversial in the beginning on who they would start since they had brought in a quarterback for quite a bit of money. But it's just going to be a great playoff. I really believe that. It's going to be fun to see how Andrew Luck and Wilson and RG3 handle the stress of the playoffs. I think they are very mature for their age. I think they've been through the wars. I can't imagine that it would have an effect on either of the three. I think the effect comes when you're playing in the playoffs and everybody's ramped it up a notch, whether your teams are good enough on the lines to get the things done, whether your receivers can get the routes run, and whether your running backs can move the ball for you on the ground, so it gives you some opportunities to throw it. And I think Luck and RG3 are special. Wilson is special, just like that crop in 1983. You know, you can pick out negatives. You can say, well, they don't do this, or RG3, I'm not sure if he can hold up under the beating he takes, or Wilson hasn't played the schedule that these other guys have played. You know, Luck hasn't beat a lot of teams with winning records. But in the end, you put three rookie quarterbacks behind that line, and they've gotten the job done for their team, and they're in the playoffs. And then you've got Manning, who just lifted Denver. And, yes, folks, Denver was a playoff team last year. I understand that. They got in by a great second half by Tim Tebow and people stepping up. But there's no doubt that Peyton Manning lifted that team up to another level. They've got home field advantage, and anyone who's participated in sports or follows sports knows that that can be very, very important in the playoffs for Denver, especially because of the altitude. So, but you know what? It's the playoffs, and anything can really happen. You can have situations where people just don't get the job done. Somebody gets hurt in the game. The game plan doesn't go the way it needed to go. The line doesn't block the way it needs to block. There's new schemes that are put in, and you're not ready for them. But you just got to give this rookie group a lot of credit. And just a lot of love to the Colts and Pagano and what he went through. And the word is that Arian is going to get an opportunity to interview with the Chicago Bears for their open job. And I don't know if Lovie Smith needed to go, but he did a nice job. But it just seemed like when it was nut-cutting time, they just couldn't quite get it done, no matter who the quarterback was, the running back. The defense was always dominant throughout the year, most of the year. They just couldn't find a way into the playoffs. So if you don't make the playoffs 5 out of 6 years or something like that, they pay you a lot of money. I think Lovie was getting about $4 million a year, somewhere in that, maybe more. And so Bruce Arians has an opportunity. He's paid his dues. He did a great job in coming in and holding the team together. And I think that's why, for me, folks, and you may disagree, and that's fine, let us know. It's your sports talk show, let us know. That's why I think that Andrew Luck should be the rookie of the year. He not only came into a new situation, but he had to take on the coaching difficulty that went on and all that stuff. So,
hey, Coach.
Yeah, Joe.
Okay, you know, we were going to have Don Fisher on first. He informed us he has to do a quick interview that he has to get done, and he's going to be calling in just a little bit. And after the break, though, I've got Slick Weber lined up to talk about the 100-year reunion.
You know, the thing about having Slick on this early, Joe, we got to make sure he loves hoop, and he's going to be going on that 100 years, so we got to make sure we're good on this time.
Yeah, we will.
All right. We're excited to talk to Slick. When we come back, we'll talk with Slick Weber in the 100-year basketball. Stay with us because Don Fisher's coming up in just a little while. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
We are on double secret probation, whatever that is. We can't afford to have a toga party.
You guys up for a toga party?
Toga! Toga!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, we're back, and we've got Wildcat legend Slick Weber on with us. And Slick, you heard the opening there leading into your interview. Did you have some toga parties down at Vanderbilt?
Yes, we did. I got to admit that we did. And those were some great times. I'll say that. Heck, I've had some toga parties in Indianapolis, and I may have even had one in Jasper. I'm not sure about that.
Well, I hope that all you you had more on than just your toga sheet. So, but I'm sure that was a lot of fun. Slick, I'm glad you could step up for us. We were going to have you on later in the show, but as is live talk radio, sometimes things work differently. Don Fisher has to finish up an interview. So we've got as good with Slick Weber, and we're talking the 100 years of Jasper basketball celebration, which will take place at the KFC in Jasper tomorrow night.
Yeah, boy, do we have a lineup for everybody? I've got five, not me, but we've got anywhere between 125 to 135 ex-players coming back to celebrate the 100 seasons. I've got coaches. I've got broadcasters, sports writers. It ought to be one heck of a good time. And any of those ex-players out there that hasn't contacted me or what have you, if they still want to come, it starts at 6:30 at the KSC in Jasper. It's a pretty informal affair. A lot of story swapping and what have you. And, man, I tell you what, Kenny, I'm looking so forward to this. You would have no idea. It ought to be a great time. Got a couple of speakers lined up. Bob White's going to say a few words. And, of course, your dad's going to chime in a little bit. Jerry Bird's going to take the podium for a while. That may fill up the night by itself. But it ought to be a great night. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Hey, Slick, you know, this has really kind of been – you and a few other people's brainchild, and you've really done a great job at getting the word out. I think at one time you were worried. You just didn't know if anybody, how many would come, and I knew that you'd get a great response. First of all, anytime you can get the people together in Jasper with basketball and possibly some beer, you're going to have a nice turnout. Some of the people that helped you put this together.
Well, you know, I started out with a group of about three or four of us, and that included Kevin Manley, my old running mate at guard there at Jasper, and Rick Bagley, who played in 1977. He was a big influence on that renovation of the Cabby O'Neill gym. And then I got Greg Erkley to help. Greg Erkley is a big Jasper enthusiast, and he writes several columns in the past for the Courier concerning Jasper sports. The Boomer magazine, which I don't know if you're familiar with or not, but he's done some sports articles, and I know he had some connections, and he also was very, in fact, he was the man that got together all the sports memorabilia for the DuBois County Museum, and I suggest very highly, if anybody's not been out there to see that, that is really, really a great job he's done. In fact, I was talking to him the other night, and he's got his hands on the 1949 basketball that won the state championship, and the scorebook from that year. So he was very excited. They found that down in somebody's basement and didn't know it was there. So, yeah, but yeah, those four. And Rich Murder has been pretty helpful also, especially getting the guys from the 40s and 50s. So it's been a group effort, and you know, it's one of those things, once you get one guy's name, he'll give you three or four other guys' email addresses or phone numbers. So it's been a group effort, not only by those five guys, but all the ex-Wildcats. You know, it's a bomb there between all of us. You put on the old black and gold and stepped out on that gym floor, man, it was special. And I believe all these guys realize that. So it's been a great, very rewarding for me, I'll say that.
And I would even add that people, if they have some memorabilia that they know is one of a kind or not many left, bring it along to the event so people can see it. I know a few years ago when I was coaching at Jasper, I found things that they were getting ready to throw out, and among them were all these letters and things that came to Cabbie after the 1949 state championship, and I couldn't believe they were going to get rid of them, and we passed those on to the museum. And there's just so much, and people have things in their basements or in their rooms, and they don't think about it, or they saved it in their treasure chest. They don't think that it has importance, but it really does, because as time goes on, Slick, you know this, our desire to remember those things becomes greater, but the things we have to remember it by seem to get limited.
Yeah, well, obviously that's true. You know, as you get older, either your memory gets worse or you start imagining that you're better than what you really were. So it goes both ways. And sometimes, I've got some memorabilia from the times I played for your father. And I go down there every once in a while and crack open the book. And it just brings back, you know, tons of memories that are so great. And the guys I got to play with, and how blessed I was to have your father, Rex Maid, Dom Doblett, and the list goes on of those people that influenced my life and how thankful I really am. And, you know, I don't want to belabor the point, but you have no idea. You know, I had the privilege of calling, you know, Bobby Crowline, Mick Stefanago, Bob White, the list goes on, and how thankful and grateful these guys are that this has taken place. Even if they can't come, they're like, man, thank you so very much for thinking of me. It means so much, you know. I mean, it just went on. And then you talk to these guys for, you know, heck, I spent an hour on the phone to Bobby Murder and Mickey Sermersheim, and it was just a treat. I mean, it means so much to those guys, the years that they played for the Wildcats and the coaches they've had. And they always ask, you know, did you get a hold of Barney Scott, or, you know, do you have his phone number that I might be able to call him? And things like that, you know. And, of course, you know, the players I played with, you know, those guys are all coming back. You know, Tommy Nicholson, Manley, Al Fang, Mike Brown, you know, Wayne Bailey, Jim Wenzel. You know, those guys are coming back because it meant something to them, and it's an important thing in their life. So I'm just overjoyed. I'm a little concerned, Kenny, I'll be honest with you. I think I got, like I said, 125 to 130 players coming, probably about 200-plus people. At KSC, it may be a little crowded, so we ought to have a great time. That's for doggone sure.
Now, Slick, I know we got there's the event at the KFC, but also, are you also opening up the Cabbie O'Neill gym earlier in the day?
Yes, Rick Bailey. Rick Bailey's going to have that open from 5 o'clock on to about 6:15. If anybody's not seen that, especially some of those guys coming in from out of town for the event, you ought to stop by and see that, because you're talking about a beautiful gymnasium for what, you know, it turned out great. And I was just in there about a week ago. I was up there, some guys were shooting some baskets, so I stopped by, and that led on to a couple more beers. But it was a great day. You know, it's a great gym, and, man, I tell you what, that really brings back some memories. But, yeah, it'll be open from about – from 5 o'clock to about 6:15, 6:30 at the KSC. That little program with guys speaking will probably last about, but we'll probably start, I mean, about 7:30, quarter to 8, depending on how the night's going. I also want to thank the Jasper Booster Club. They're providing brats and pretzels and chips and what have you. So, you know, it'll be there all night. And the KSC's done a real fine job for me as far as their cooperation and working with me and Rick Bagley and Greg Effley and what have you, as far as the setup and what have you. So it'll be great. I mean, it'll be a great time. I'm really looking forward to it. I wish I would have had more time, Kenny and Joe, because I was hoping to put together a video and scan some pictures, but I think I'm going to run out of time, because if I do it now, I won't do it justice. So, but I plan on
interviewing. No matter what you do here, Slick, it's going to be a great time, because what's going to happen, and I encourage anybody who's even considering it, who has that tie to Jasper basketball, to come out, because I think once you walk in and you connect, touch base, see some of the people, it's just going to bring such emotion back to you, and you're just going to want to stay there and be a part of it. I know a few years back is probably the closest thing we've had to this. We had a 80th birthday party for my dad, and brought back the players that played for him. But we're talking about players from all decades. So, folks, this is going to be a great time. And Slick, I got to pat you on the back and say Jasper basketball is fortunate to have you in the place you're at this time.
Well, I appreciate that, Kenny. And like I said, it's been a labor of love, so I'm really looking forward to it. And I appreciate what your show has done for us, promoting the event. And you know what? I really enjoy your show. I listen to it as much as I can, and I got a couple saved there on my list to listen to for past shows. So I think you're doing a wonderful thing, and I'm sure your audience is growing and growing. So.
It really is,
and
we've had just some great guests with you and some great ones today. You know, I always say this when people ask me about it, I'd rather be coaching, but this ain't a bad gig for right now to get to talk to all the sports people. Slick, good luck tomorrow night. Hope to see you, and should be a lot of fun.
You'll be ready to go. I die today, so.
Don't say that. We're going to go to break and come back with the voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams. Natural-looking fillings. Crowns. Bridges and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care. Creating beautiful smiles.
Count then went back in. 19 for him. Here comes Riddell Jones. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. 3 on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! And Indiana wins the ball game. Christian Watford with a 3. And the Hoosiers have knocked off the number one ranked Kentucky Wildcats. Unbelievable!
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show with probably the most recognizable voice in the state of Indiana, legendary sportscaster and voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, Don Fisher. Don, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Man, Don, this is Coach K. It is just a privilege to have you on the show, and I know I'm probably going to get a little emotion here talking to you, but, you know, I can just remember being an Indiana grad and going through and you know, We called you Don Fisher, Mr. Fisher. We called you Fisho. We called you Fish. And when we turned down the telecast to listen to you on the radio, we'd yell, Fish on, Fish on. So pleasure to have you. And, well, let me just start real quickly by saying, what's it like when you win so many broadcasting awards? Do the other guys just say, I'm not going to the awards program because Fisher's going to win it again?
I'll be honest with you. I don't know what the other guys say, but I'm sure at some point it gets a little tiresome for them, and I understand that completely. In fact, you know, the Indiana Sportscasters and Sports Writers Association gave me their award like 4 times in a 5-year span back in the 70s, and I haven't won it since because I think they decided that because the NSSA was going to give me that award, or at least I would be voted on that award on so many different scenarios, that the NSSA award became the one that I was allowed to win, and the ISSA award went by the way. So whatever the case it is, you know, honest to goodness, there are a lot of great broadcasters in the state, And I probably get more exposure than virtually anybody else. And from that perspective alone, I feel very humbled and gratified that people get a chance to hear what I do and enjoy it. So from that perspective alone, I'm quite pleased.
Well, Don, the one thing that I really like about listening to your broadcast, you bring the fan into your play-by-play. You're not over the top with your emotion, except, you know, when it's a game-winning shot like Kentucky or a Keith Smart to win an NCAA championship. But you flow with the game so well, and you make the listener a part of it. And you know what? You're not afraid. You're not afraid to say, well, the Hoosiers just don't look very good right now. And
right.
I think that's the thing that connects so much of us, being a former coach and watching the games. I mean, you're willing to be honest about what you're seeing on the floor.
Well, and I think that's a part of being a good play-by-play broadcaster. You've got to, let's face it, I've been a part of Indiana for 40 years, and I was a part of it. When I was a part of it for 5 years, I still felt like this is my team. I'm broadcasting for IU. But at the same time, there's an objectivity that you must have as a play-by-play announcer if you're going to have any credibility. And that's so I've always tried to look at it that way. I feel like I bring to the table an objective bias, if there is such a thing. and you're trying to be fair. And I think if you're fair with how you go about commenting on a ball game, and you're fair with the other team and their players, I think most people respect that and at least can enjoy it. I can't tell you the number of people from Purdue who have come up to me in the past and said, you know what, we are Purdue fans, but we still love listening to your broadcast because you're fair about it. So I think that's a great compliment.
I absolutely agree with them 100%, even if they are Purdue fans. I can tell you that Joe, the other half of this show, is a big Purdue fan, so he probably appreciates that as well. Don, I want to respect your time because I want to make sure you come back. I have so many things I want to talk to you about, but let me hit on we have a question that came in, and then I want to talk a little bit about the football program and the basketball season going on.
Sure.
I got a question from Tony, and he asks, were you able to see, did you call the games for Downing and obviously Benson and now Cody Zeller? How do you rank these three with their skills and their abilities, and where do you see Cody's future?
Well, honestly, I did not do any games when Steve Downing was a player. He graduated at the end of the 72-73 season, and I came in 73-74. That was my first year of IU basketball with Coach Knight in his third season. So I didn't see Steve play except on television, and obviously I knew about him through, you know, I was in Terre Haute back in 70-71-72. At that time, so I watched him from afar. So I can't really, I didn't see him enough, but I just know this, that he was a tremendous player. I mean, Steve Downing was a great center, a great post player, did everything that Coach Knight wanted him to do and flourished in that system. At the same time, Kent Benson, I think, was from beginning to end of his career as improved a player as I'd seen at Indiana and have through the years, because I thought he made tremendous changes in his game and positive changes, got more physical, did all those kinds of things, developed an outside 15-foot jump shot, although he always had that, but really honed it at Indiana. And he had a great hook shot with either hand. He was tremendous in the post, but I thought he grew as a player and developed as a player tremendously through his 4 years at IU. Cody Zeller, in my opinion, is came into IU as probably as fundamentally a sound basketball player as a freshman that I've ever seen. And that's saying something, because Steve Alford was pretty fundamentally sound when he came in too. But this kid, I think, has affected the game at Indiana more than any freshman I've ever seen because of his skill level and because of his fundamentals. I just think that he is so well-schooled coming in that nobody has affected a team as much as he did last year since I've been at Indiana in my 40 years. So Cody, to me, is without doubt probably the most prepared to play at this level, except from a physical standpoint. His physicality last year definitely had to improve, And I still don't think it's where it needs to be right now. I don't think he's as physically strong as he needs to be, even though he's put on 15 pounds over a year ago or maybe even close to 20. I don't think he's still as physically strong as he needs to be, and that can only come with maturity and the body growing in that maturation process. So, but other than that, there's not much I can say negative about Cody Zeller.
Now, Don, I Kenny was right. Coach K, I am one of those Purdue people that think you're one of the tops in your field, and I always enjoy listening to you. And my question is, though, you've been through so many great moments and called so many great moments in IU sports history. What are a couple of your favorites?
Well, there are so many. It's hard to pinpoint, but and very quickly, I'll just tell you this, that the moment in 76 when Indiana knew that they won the national championship with about 2.5 minutes to go in the ball game was one of my all-time favorite moments. I saw the players for the first time that season go through the shenanigans that you see all the time these days after a 2-0 lead. You know, you see it these days. But back then, that team showed very little emotion, didn't do much of anything in regard to responding to wins or dunks or any of those kinds of things. And when you watch them play, there was just a business-like atmosphere about them. But in that last 2 minutes of that 76 national championship game, those kids let it all hang out. And, man, they were so excited, jumping up and down, hugging one another. That, to me, is still one of the most emotional moments of my broadcasting career and one of the great ones that I'll always remember. And then you take the Keith Smart shot in 87, phenomenal performance by Smart in that ball game, and of course Steve Alford's shot at the buzzer to beat Michigan at Michigan in 87. The ball rolled around the rim and dropped through, and Coach Knight, I've never seen him show that kind of emotion. He jumped in the air as high as I've ever seen him jump, and did a pirouette in the middle of the floor and then ran off the floor. And then, of course, he had to bring the team back on, but they put 2.7 seconds or something like that back on the clock, and they had to run the clock out at the end. So, but that was another moment of memory. And then, of course, the Duke game in 2002 down in Lexington, Kentucky, and the way that game ended and the tremendous emotion that was involved in that game. And, of course, Christian Watford's shot. Who can forget that? And, of course, the Smart shot in 87, as I said before. So those are some of the great moments from a basketball standpoint. From football, nothing will stand out further in my mind than the 1987 victory over Ohio State at Ohio State in Columbus. Bill Mallory was carried off the shoulders, off the field, on the shoulders of the players in that ball game. To me, it's still one of the great moments of all time in Indiana football history. That was such a big win. It stopped the, 34-game winning streak that Ohio State had over IU, and it took place in Columbus where they rang that bell for every point that they scored in a ball game if they won, and that bell never rang that day. It's still one of the great memories of my broadcast career.
You know, that was a great, great victory for the football program, and speaking of the football program, Coach Wilson is trying to get some things done. We've really seen the offense perk up. We probably got three pretty good quarterbacks in the stable. Of course, Fish, you see them all the time, so you can correct me at any point as you come back and talk about it. But it looks like to me, from what we're seeing on Pigs.com and Inside the Hall and all these other things, that football-wise, we're starting to get noticed by some good quality players out of the Indianapolis area and around the states, and the good thing is they may be defensive in nature, and that's where we've got to shore things up.
Well, I couldn't stop you any place because you're absolutely right. I mean, defense is where Indiana has struggled since Bill Mallory was the coach, and 94 was the last time that I say that, and there have been a defensive team or two that weren't bad, but we haven't been a consistently good defensive team since Bill Mallory was the head coach back in the 80s and early 90s. And unfortunately, that's the name of the game if you're going to be really good and have a championship-type program. And I say unfortunately because Indiana just hasn't had that kind of defensive play since those years. And when you look at the success that Mallory had, why was it? Was it because Indiana had offense? Well, sure. Obviously, you've got to have offensive players too. But the reason those teams were able to win was because they could stop people. And Indiana hasn't been able to do that for a long time now. And I think that's the difference. If Kevin Wilson is to get it done in Indiana, it will be because of defensive play, not offensive. Because if you look back at Indiana's history, we've always had good offensive players. I mean, generally speaking, you can go back and say that Indiana's had as good an offensive players as just about anybody. And maybe not on a yearly basis, but certainly on an every 2 or 3 or 4 year basis, Indiana's offense takes a backseat to nobody, but they couldn't stop anybody. And those are the issues you're dealing with at IU. And because of what Wilson's done here in the last several months with the Indianapolis kids, that he's gotten 3 4-star players out of the city of Indianapolis, that to me is absolutely huge. And if he can continue to do that, this thing will get turned around.
Let's jump over to basketball, and I'll just add to your comment. I don't care what sport you play, you got to be able to defend. I cut my teeth on Coach Knight's philosophy defensively and Rick Pitino. A lot of people thought Rick Pitino's just offense, but he really focuses on the defensive end just differently. But you got to play defense. The basketball side of the Hoosiers, and boy, do we love what they did. What Coach Crean has done recruiting-wise and kids he's brought in, and he's trying to do it the right way. And when there is a question, Fred Glass and the administration have jumped in and held the line until it was taken care of. Jerkin, Perea, and most recently Hollowell. Let me ask you, Fish, this basketball team, there's no doubt the non-conference schedule was soft, and everybody knows that. But Butler, having Butler towards the end and then having Iowa to start the Big Ten, I thought exposed a couple things that I think are, you know, IU can work on, but want to get your comments on them. One, we're very athletic, but I think we got used to winning athletically, and then Butler kind of gave us a wake-up call and said, you better learn to play physical if you're going to control the pace of the game. And then at Iowa, I thought our transition defense, failing to get back, pointing the ball, finding the outlet man, really got exposed. Now, having said that, we're still in the early throes of January. All those things can be taken care of because we got a heck of a team. But your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. I don't think there's any question that the schedule hasn't helped us. And I say that because I don't think that Coach Crean probably would have had this schedule if it would have if he knew what was going to happen a couple of years ago. Because nobody knew how quick the turnaround was going to take place. And last year's team obviously, you know, catapulted Indiana back into the national limelight all of a sudden after 6, 10, and 12 win seasons. And honestly, I think the schedule is a product of those 6, 10, and 12 year schedules rather than it is of what they did last season. But all that said, you've got to play. I think you have to play tougher competition to get ready for tougher competition, and this year I don't think Indiana's schedule was conducive to that. Therefore, I thought that's one of the reasons Butler was able to win that ball game, because I don't think Indiana matched their physicality, and obviously that was a negative. I think they realized that, and they've come back with a more of a physical nature in their game here of late. But the Iowa ball game, I think, exactly right, exposed Indiana's transition defensive play and why they've got to get back defensively much quicker than they did in that ball game. At the same time, the one thing that I know about Coach Crean is that he works on all these things that he sees in every one of these ball games, and those things become very much a paramount issue in his practice sessions. And I'm sure that Iowa's ability to do that and what they exposed in that situation also opened Coach Crean's eyes to those things that they don't do quite as well. Athletes are, you know, great athletes have to learn to be very physical as well. And I think sometimes the physicality of the game is a little unfair. I'll be honest with you. The way the game is played today sometimes irritates me. It shouldn't be a wrestling match inside, and it shouldn't be just banging on somebody out there at the point guard spot when you can just take your forearm and shove it into their back and get away with that. I, I don't get that. But that's the way the game's officiated today, and that's what you've got to be able to do yourself. And if you can't, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I think most coaches, even when I was on the high school level and we were going through, we'd always say, we're going to see what the officials are going to let us do tonight. If they're going to let us play physical, we're going to play physical, because we felt like that was to our advantage. Two things before we let you go in this segment. One, your thoughts on it. Yogi Ferrell has absolutely turned his offensive game around, in my opinion, as far as his follow-through, his getting his feet set, hitting the shots. But in that, do you feel like that teams have said, we're going to guard Cody Zeller? He got too many easy rebound putbacks. He got too many kickoffs. We're going to guard Cody Zeller, and we're going to make sure that Jordan Hulls can't get the kick out at the three-point line when Yogi penetrates. And if Yogi hits shots, he hits shots, but we're not going to let him get the big three runs, and we're not going to let him get the big momentum and one from Zeller. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think that Yogi Ferrell is going to have to start shooting the basketball more, and he's going to have to start shooting it better. There's no doubt in my mind that he will do those kinds of things. Whether he can make that kind of transition during the season, I don't know. And Yogi's a kid that works, and they've got enough gym rats in this team that they prove to these other guys, you've got to go out and work extra. You can't just rely on playing the game, practicing with your team, and then going home. You're going to have to stay in that gym a little extra longer, and Yogi's one of those guys that will do that. So my feeling is that until he shoots the basketball effectively from outside, they're going to give him those shots, and they're going to take away everybody else, or as much as they can of everybody else in that context. Cody is a guy that I still feel has to develop a little bit more physically, and I think that's going to be the critical factor. And he's going to get – look, last year, if you looked at the Wisconsin game at the end of the season when we got beat in the Big Ten tournament, what was the deciding factor in that game? It was Berggren, the Wisconsin post player who shoved Cody all over the floor. In this season's start, we've seen some of the same kind of action. And Cody, to me, has got to become more of a physical basketball player than what he is right now, because he's always been able to do it the way he's done it, which is fundamentally sound and in more of a finesse fashion. And in the Big Ten, you're not going to be able to do that as effectively, because they're just going to be manhandling you if you allow it. So I just think those are the areas that this basketball team has to improve on. I don't think there's any doubt that they're going to try and take away Halls. They're going to try and take away the shooters when they can possibly do that. And Indiana's got to become a more physical basketball team. And I honestly believe that they're making strides in that area. I thought the Iowa game, despite the fact that Indiana didn't get back, as you point out, defensively a few times, I thought that they did a really good job in their half-court defense, because they only allowed Iowa to shoot 33%. And Roy Devin Marble, who's their star player, went 1 for 13 or 14 in that ball game. The only reason he got his points in that contest was because he went to the free throw line forever. So, honestly, I think that there are issues that Indiana has, no question. But every basketball team at this point in the season has some issues, and those things have to be worked on and have to be corrected as the year goes on if you're going to be a championship-type team.
Okay, well said, Fish. Last thing, and we'll say goodbye, and thank you so much for coming. But the last thing, Don has a question out of Indianapolis. He wants you to just give a quick rundown of your compare and contrast, just quickly, of the coaches you've worked with. Obviously, Knight, Davis, Sampson, and now Crean.
And he wants me to give a comparison of those guys?
Just what it was like, what was unique about each one or different?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Coach Knight was, in my opinion, one of the reasons that he was as great a basketball coach as he was is because of his ability to break down film and break down mistakes and things that players did, and then devise a way to take advantage of those situations. I thought he was phenomenal at his preparation for ball games and his getting kids ready to play. He was tremendous in those areas, and did it. You know, he was one of those guys that he believed that he had to break a guy down and then build him back up again. Some kids could take that, some kids couldn't, but that's the way he went about his business. So that said, Coach Knight had a tremendous record. You can't argue with what he did. From my standpoint as a broadcaster, he was not the easiest guy in the world to deal with, although we had a good relationship from a professional standpoint. I think he respected me after a few years that I was there and proved myself to him, so to speak. But he was never the easiest guy to get along with in the sense of, you know, just walking in and talking and all those kinds of things and having a good time. That's not the way it was. At least it wasn't for me in that context. But again, he was just a tremendous basketball coach and one of the great minds in the game of basketball. Mike Davis was a little bit different because Mike was taking over a program that had national prominence, and he was in a fishbowl that he'd never been in before. And I love Mike Davis. We were very good friends when he was an assistant coach, and we stayed that way through his head coaching career at Indiana. There were things that Mike struggled with as a coach that I don't think he would have had he taken over a program at a smaller level initially and been able to grow into the position. But he was kind of thrown into that spot, and he had a lot to learn about becoming a head coach, and he would be the first to tell you that he did. And he let a few too many things bother him, but what a great person and one of the most honest men I've ever been around. And I really enjoyed Mike. I really did. I drove him home after games, many night home games, and sat in his driveway and talked basketball and some of the changes that he needed to make and those kinds of things. And I still revere those times because it's very rare when you're that close to a head college basketball coach, but we were really a tight pair, so to speak. Kelvin Sampson, I think, is a brilliant basketball mind, and people don't, they want to be negative about him as to what he did at Indiana and the probation that we landed and all the negative things that came down after he left. But from a pure basketball coaching standpoint, that guy knew how to coach. And the other thing that he was good at, he could find guys out there that maybe weren't a top 100 player, but they were tough, hard-nosed type kids that would come in and play their butts off for him. And so I thought that was interesting about Kelvin. He also had a little bit of an air to him sometimes that made it difficult to get to know him for some guys. But for me, he was always terrific. We had a great relationship. And the only thing I would tell you is on the golf course, you didn't want to bet him because there was a good chance you were going to get beat. He was a very good player on the golf course. And if you did beat him, you didn't always get paid. Sorry to say that. let me think. And then, of course, with Tom Crean, I don't think I've ever seen a coach come into a situation like he came into and never complain about it, other than the fact that he would say, look, this is what I inherited, this is what I've got to deal with, but I'm going to get this thing turned around. And I never heard him really complain. I really didn't. And you could sit there and talk about a 6-win, 10-win, 12-win seasons, and this guy never lost his focus on what he wanted to accomplish or how he felt like they could accomplish that. And he stayed true to himself and to his program. And the other thing I'll say about Coach Crean, this guy handles the fan base as well as any I've ever seen. I mean, he absolutely endears himself to the fan base because he will sign every autograph, take every picture that somebody wants to take. He remembers people. He's got a tremendous photographic memory for people. People come up to our talk show. I know he hasn't seen this guy or this person in 2 or 3 years, and he signed an autograph or took a picture with him. And they'll start to relate that to him, and he'll finish what they're going to say to let them know that he does remember who they are. He's phenomenal that way, and he really appreciates Indiana basketball and its culture and the tradition and the history of this program, and that's why I think the fans love him so much.
Great stuff, Fish, and you're right on Coach Crean. He's just done a super job with the recruiting and bringing the fans back into it. Thank you for being with us. Let me just say that if Coach Waltman can't make it sometime, give Coach K a call. I know the Hoosiers. I love hoop. Be glad to be your play-by-play sidekick. And secondly, a former Hoosier who played for me in high school, Michael Lewis. I hope he was nice to you when he was at IU.
Mike and I are really good friends. In fact, my wife and his one of his well, I Mike. Let me think how this all works out. Mike's a marshal. His mom was a marshal, and I think a brother somehow or a whatever. It's not a brother, but But I've known Mike Lewis forever, and just let me say this. He is a terrific young man. I think he's a terrific basketball coach. He was a heck of a player. I really enjoyed watching Mike play when he was a point guard at Indiana and dealt with Coach Knight and some of Coach Knight's personality issues. And Mike would stand right there, take every moment of it, have a little frown on his face like, you ain't getting to me, that type of thing, you know. And I just loved him. And, of course, his mom and dad are great people as well, and I've always enjoyed them, being around them as much as I was. So I can just tell you that I know Mikey well, and we had a big hug when we played him, when Butler and Indiana played up at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And he's just a terrific person, and there's no doubt in my mind when he gets a head coaching job, he's going to be a huge success.
Steve, or Don, excuse me, Don, thanks for being with us. It was awesome. You're wonderful. You're an icon to all Hoosier fans everywhere. Happy New Year, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year to you guys as well. And, Joe, try to hang in there with your Boilermakers.
I'm trying.
You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
We are going to do what we set out to do. We're going to win that tournament.
Yes! I knew it. I knew you were a champion the minute I saw you bowl, Ish.
I'm not going to bowl. You are.
You are such a loser. You're a bona fide schmuck. Look at me!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. And, you know, we're back with a great guest here. Some know him as Iowa great and Indianapolis Colt great. But we know him as Coach Davey's son, A.J. Eads. How you doing, A.J.?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
A.J., this is Coach K, and absolutely, you have excelled on every level, high school, college. Now you're on the injured reserve, but in the NFL, and you're playing with a team or part of a team that is going into the playoffs. I mean, you have got to be looking and saying, how does life get this good?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, it's to go through the transition we went through really this time last year is when it all began, and to see where we're at right now, to still be playing, and it's not like we just kind of fell into a spot. We went out and earned it. We won some really tough games, put a lot of work in on the road at home, and we like where we're sitting right now, and so we're working hard this week to get out to Baltimore, and it's an interesting week. We have a lot of history on our current staff and with our current roster, guys that spent time in Baltimore in some capacity. So it's going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out on Sunday, and hopefully this time next week we're getting ready again.
AJ, how have you, as you looked at Andrew Luck in his rookie season and seen the composure and handling the key interception, but coming right back and getting the job done, being tough in those last couple minutes, were you a little bit astounded by it, or did from the day he came in, did you see that and say, this guy gets it, he has what it takes, it's just a matter if our offensive line can hold up?
Well, I think it was a question of everybody knew as soon as he stepped into the building that he had what it took and he had the tools and everything like that. I don't think that anybody necessarily would have forecasted that he would have the success as quickly and as often as he's had it this year. I mean, kid's unflappable. He learns from his mistakes. He gets better as the game carries on. That's one thing that is a tremendous compliment to any quarterback, is that they're playing their best football at the end of the game, you know, when it really is important, when it's crunch time. And that's a great quality that Andrew has. And he holds himself just like any champion, anybody that has the will to win. He holds himself in a very he holds in a very high regard, and he holds himself to a pretty high standard of play. And he'll be the first person to tell you when he doesn't think he's holding up his end of the bargain, and he'll do whatever he needs to do to get it right. So it's a guy he's great to have in the locker room, because he, by virtue of his work ethic, pulls everybody along with him, especially having a roster as young as we do. It's great to have a guy like that that's kind of, you know, the bell cow and out in front of the group and everything like that.
You know, AJ, one thing that I want to mention to everyone is you are not a dummy. You are pretty solid student, academic, all Big Ten at Iowa for 3 years. Obviously, you come from a educator's family. I had your dad as a history teacher. I didn't play football, so I didn't have him as a coach, but I can tell you I had great respect for him in the classroom because he didn't just come to coach. He came as a teacher, and I always appreciated that. But what I wanted to ask you was, how frustrating have the injuries been? You get cleared. You're ready to go. An ankle, potential concussion, the ACL. How have you handled that? Or have you just accepted it's just part of the game?
Well, first of all, congrats. Or you know, I'm sure you got some stories about Diamond David Eads. They're teaching some history classes that could go for days. But you know, the injuries really are, they're part of the game. And the way that you can combat injuries is to, you know, get yourself as strong and as prepared for the combat, because what it is, I mean, an NFL game is, it's chaos. It's, I mean, you look at what happens inside the box, and it's controlled chaos. And so you really just have to get your body prepared for it. And there's always things that, no matter how much preparation, what level of work you put in, you can't foresee and you can't really stop. So injuries are definitely part of it, and it's about managing those injuries. And I mean, this time of year, you go through the locker room and not one single guy is feeling good. I mean, there's guys that, you know, feel better than, you know, they might have a couple weeks ago, but nobody's feeling fresh. Everybody's starting to feel the effects of, you know, what's been a physical season, and that's every team across the league. It's not just us. And so, you know, that's more bumps and bruises kind of stuff. As far as actual injuries, it's a deal where, you know, once you have everything done and the work's repaired and the doctors take care of you, it's really just about focus and work ethic and how much better you want to get, because at the end of the day, you know, you're the only person that's going to care as much about your rehab as you. So you really have to kind of spearhead it and you know, really kind of write your own destiny to a certain degree as far as how much time you want to put in and you know, what the price is you're willing to pay to get better. So it's been unfortunate with me just because of the timing for a couple of things, because like you alluded to, I was really, you know, feeling good coming into this training camp this year with the body work I'd put together this summer and OTAs, mini camps and so forth. And then to obviously have a setback early on in camp was tough. But, you know, the thing in my mind, having a silver lining, is having been through this once and feeling stronger and better on my other leg than I did before the injury on that side. I know that the left side won't be any different. And it won't be, you know, anything, won't take anything profound or, you know, really outside the box to get better. It's just a matter of putting in the time and the effort on a daily basis. And in the long run, things kind of take care of themselves on a situation like this.
AJ, you know, I did play for Coach Dave Eads. And the only thing I regret is that he moved away, because we could have had you playing for the Wildcats. You know, I don't understand.
Yeah, that would have been a fun proposition, me and Luke in the same backfield.
Yeah, that would have been great. But let me ask you a question. You know, you remember the Colts last year as well, and you know, as low as it was last year, it's turned out great this year. Did you foresee the big turnaround that the Colts have made, like in the preseason at all?
You know, it's a situation where, to be honest with you, as soon as I went out to have my knee work done out in Colorado, in Vail, Colorado, and as soon as I got out there, people said, "Oh, you guys got a pretty good quarterback, and preseason he looks pretty good. You know, do you have a prediction?" I said, "You know, I'm not going to put a number on it, but I do in my heart believe that we are a playoff caliber team if we keep, you know, certain individuals healthy, which we've been able to do." And people all said, "Oh, that's kind of a nice sentiment. That'd be cool if you could do that. You know, that's nice. You guys all think that's possible." And I said, "Yeah, all right, well, you know, we'll see. I could be wrong, but I really feel like we've got the talent and we got the coaching staff and we've got the people that really believe, because there's no reason not to believe. I mean, if you look at the individuals on our team, we've got some really, really good players. To think we only had two guys go to the Pro Bowl this year, in my mind, is, you know, I could count a couple snuffs on one hand of guys that should be going, you know, if given the opportunity. So, you know, to say I'm surprised, no. It's a deal where I think if we weren't at this point, guys would be disappointed, because we've shown that we have the potential, and we've shown it all year long. And so – you know, this is by no means a culmination of things, just getting into the playoffs, but the fact that we are here and like I said earlier, we've earned a spot is, you know, just kind of a payoff for a job well done throughout the season. And now all you can hope for is a seat at the party. And, you know, now that we're in the party, there's been crazier things happen. So we're playing well right now. We got hot the last couple of weeks, really playing well, protecting the ball. You know, we beat a really good Houston team last week. So we're excited to just kind of keep going and keep playing and just see what else we can do.
Yeah, AJ, I know there's other people probably wanting to know this. And well, I am, and it's our show, so I'm going to ask it. Being on the injured reserve, what is your daily routine? How much involvement are you at the facilities, team, talking to coaches, players? Take us in the room with someone on the injured reserve list and how your day
sure.
and how your process works.
Yeah, I mean, we're all kind of in the same boat. We come in and get our work done. The guys on our while the rest of the team is in meetings, so that way they're out of the training room. The guys that need to work to play on Sunday can get their work in the mornings and once they go into meetings for the morning. The guys that have more long-term stuff going on can get their work done as well, so it's still one-on-one attention and not trying to just shuffle people through. And, you know, basically my job being on the IR is to get healthy, and that's how I can help this team best, is to get healthy and contribute in any other way that I can. So on Sundays, myself and Gerard Powers, actually one of our corners that's been down with a foot injury, chart all the plays that the opposing offense is running and, you know, try to look for any kind of, you know, tips, tendencies, things like that, nothing earth-shattering, but at the same time, you know, trying to, you know, do whatever we can on Sundays. But really throughout the week, what I'm doing is I'm doing, you know, single leg strengthening and endurance kind of stuff every day, doing pool work, aquatic work a couple days a week, lifting 3-4 days a week as well, and then just kind of staying on top of everything with the rest of my body because, you know, you put so much time in rehabbing the knee. You don't want everything else to kind of fall into disrepair by not giving it the focus it deserves as well. So, you know, really just kind of healing up and just trying to help myself, give myself the best opportunity to heal by virtue of, you know, rest and recovery and all those sort of things. So it's nothing it's not a situation where I'm in the meeting room per se every single day, but at the same time, you know, I see that I'm in the locker room every day and seeing the guys, interact with the guys on a daily basis and all that kind of stuff. So a little bit different capacity than obviously if I was playing and, you know, involved, but at the same time, I like to think that I'm still myself, the other guys in the IR are still helping out just kind of in different capacities than normal.
Yeah. And I got to want to ask you a little bit about the playoffs picture in just a second, but you know, in this last week, they called it Black Monday, all the NFL firings from Lovie Smith to Andy Reid, some of them expected, most of them really. It's just what have you done lately for me league, and there's a lot of money that gets moved around, both as for coaches and players. Andy Reid was just hired by Kansas City. The Colts having played, I believe, Kansas City, what's the state of that team, and can a guy like Andy Reid come in and really make some major changes and adjustments in a short time, or do you see that as a couple-year process?
Well, I mean, we kind of laid the foundation for how to do that. If you look at where we were last year, we were 2-14, and at this point we had no GM. We still had a head coach, but, you know, for a little bit there we had, you know, kind of an empty front office, and so if you want to see how to make that transition, it's we kind of laid the ground print or the blueprint for it. Now, you know, everybody's got a fair pull in that. You know, Ryan Griggs, our GM, has done an outstanding job. Coach Pagano, Bruce Arians, and then obviously Andrew Luck. And it's not just him. He's got a lot of help from Reggie and just guys on the offense. And really our defense is a bunch of no-name, you know, what everybody on the outside would think is kind of a hodgepodge group. But we've got some really good playmakers and guys that that can really get the job done. And so to be able to turn something around like that, you got to take a look at your roster. You got to take a look at your system. And then ultimately you got to get the right coaches in the position to relay what the message is. And I think the big thing with us is everybody bought in very quickly into what the vision was and what the program was once we got our staff in place and we started last April. So I think that it can be done. You know, in this league, it's been kind of proven. You have to have a marquee quarterback to make a run deep in the playoffs, and that's really what it's about. Nobody's satisfied with just making the playoffs. Everybody wants to get there, but no one's happy with just getting beat. You want to make a run and win the ring. So, I mean, it's been proven you have to have a good quarterback, and I'm sure that's a situation that Andy Reid's going to go in there and address with whoever the GM they put into office there as well. So it can be done. It's just tough to do. And more often than not, it does end up being a multi-year process because you do want to build through the draft, and a couple drafts can really help you get the kind of players you want, whether it be offensively or defensively, into the scheme and the system that you're trying to run. So by no means is it undoable. It's just a little bit tougher than, picking up and knowing your coaching staff, knowing the systems and so forth when you start in the spring. So teams like KC and other teams that have new head coaches, they'll get a couple extra weeks to kind of get stuff put in this spring. But obviously it's a tough fight to come in with a brand new staff and you know, try to act like that chemistry is there from day one. It's not. You've got to build that up over time, and that's kind of what the offseason program is all about.
You know, AJ, when Ryan Grigson first got hired, we heard all kinds of really good things about him, and you know, didn't know if it was hype or the truth. And he, you know, he looks like he's done an unbelievable job. What makes Ryan Grigson so good at his job?
Well, I mean, if I had the answer to that question, I'd be trying to get a GM's job. I mean, that's a little bit of a deal where everybody has kind of their own style, their own flavor about going about the job. You know, successful GMs, there are a lot of different types of successful GM. And I think that what you see here, what we've done is Grigson and his staff have done a great job evaluating and finding talent and just bringing guys in and, you know, giving guys a chance. Everybody in our roster is playing. And that's one thing that you got to love about playing on our defense, at least, is that if you're a member of this defense, you're going to have some kind of a job sooner rather than later. And you know, for better or worse, if guys get that chance and don't perform, more often than not, there's been a lot of shuffling, a lot of guys kind of coming and going throughout the season, and it's been kind of a ever-growing, job to get the right mix. And to be able to do that as we go on during the season is kind of tough to put into words how impressive that is, to grow this way with an ever-changing roster throughout the season, to get closer and more cohesive instead of going the other way. Is really, it's outstanding. It speaks to our coaching staff and to our veterans. They're getting everybody on the same page as far as, you know, expectations, roles, responsibilities, and so forth. So, to go back to your question, I mean, it really comes down to your players. I mean, you can have, you know, a really close, tight-knit group, but unless you're the players to get it done, it doesn't happen at this level. I mean, you can only get by on hard work and teamwork for so many games at this level. You're just going to get, you know, out-coached, out-schemed, out-played, because there's so many good players in this league. And so at the end of the day, you've got to have talent. And the quicker you can get that talent on the same page, you know, seeing the same message and buying into the same goals and visions is when you see teams really go from being good on paper to producing and you know, really being a good team.
Well, I'll tell you what, AJ, if you don't have it in your future, maybe you should as a general manager, because you sure know how to break it down. Hey, let me ask you one more question about the Colts, and then I'm going to ask you a family question. But from a Colts standpoint, they're in the playoffs, and you just mentioned that they want more than just to play a playoff game. Is it the emotional mindset or how the approach is? Is it a sense of urgency, or is it more a sense of, we're going to do what we've done. We're just taking another step in that process. Are people ramped up, a little more keyed up? Or is the coaches and the leaders of the team, Andrew Luck and some of the other guys, saying, hey, let's just stay focused, even keel, and take care of business?
Well, I mean, you win games like this by just, you know, doing what you've been doing. You got to protect the ball. You got to stop the run on defense. And you got to score points on offense. And so, you know, it sounds easy enough, but the way you do that is just by practicing well, staying focused on the fundamentals and just, you know, doing the things that have gotten you to this point. Now, at the same time, there's a sense of urgency because, you know, hopefully Andrew and, you know, the young guys in this team will be back in this position for years to come. But, you know, you look at a guy like Dwight or, you know, Reggie or some of these older guys, you don't know how many years left they've got in this league, and they might not get back to this point. And so you want to go out there and just put it on the line for those guys, because this could be their last chance to be in the playoffs and to give it a run and to, you know, to go out and not give your absolute all to be able to help those guys, you know, get as deep as they can and give it everything they've got. You know, it's stealing from them. So there's a sense of urgency in this mindset that you want to go out and you know, get it done for those guys that have been so instrumental to this organization over the years and, you know, throughout the course of this season. I mean, without our vets, there's no question we're not where we are right now. So you feel like you owe it to each other, but you owe it to yourself as well. You've gotten this far. Why would you not prepare and put in the time and effort to go out and give yourself the best chance to win? So the focus is just a little bit ramped up. The intensity is a little bit ramped up. Everybody's kind of on edge a little bit, you know, so it's a good thing. It's kind of like a prize fighter before he goes into the ring. You know, everything's good, but, you know, that focus and combative mentality is definitely right there on the edge of your mind. So it's a good feel around the building, and I think everybody just – I don't think anybody wants to be done. Nobody's ready to be finished yet, which is a good thing, because when that's the case, you'll just kind of keep doing, keep clawing, keep scratching, and we got a bunch of young guys that don't know any better. I mean, when you get your back against a wall, what are you going to do? You start swinging, you come out fighting, and these guys don't know any different, and that's just our mentality is, you know, hey, we might get behind. We might not have everything go our way the whole time, but you're not just going to, you know, fall into a victory. You're only going to get there to scratch and fight and do whatever it takes to give yourself a chance down the wire, and we've got a bunch of guys that are tremendous at doing that, and, you know, we got a bunch of fighters, which is what you want.
Well, our listeners may not understand, but you made a great point, people not ready to be done. And there are, unfortunately, on the pro level, college, high school level, you get guys that just want the season to be over for whatever reason, winning, they want to do something else, they're tired. It's sad, but it happens. So that's great to hear. You just a quick comment, Ray Lewis, too big of an announcement to throw on that team, or nice little fuel for the fire?
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Ray Lewis.
I zoned off for a second. Oh, yeah, I mean, with Ray, I mean, it's a deal where, I mean, he's their vision. He's their guy. There's no question that he's the guy that makes it go. Obviously, you know, Terrell Suggs and Ed Reed are tremendous players as well, but Ray, rather, is the guy that he's the engine to that train. And so I'm sure he'll give him a lift, but at the same time, you know, hasn't played in a while. He's one of the best ever, but everybody's got to knock that rust off to a certain extent. And, you know, it's the timing of the retirement announcement is, it seems like it's trying to give him a little bit of a spark. And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, the way you combat that is by going out and you know, establish the run game and then take what they give you in the passing attack as well. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. Honestly, Ray Lewis is a different kind of guy. He doesn't operate by normal set of rules and parameters, so he might come back and, you know, look better than ever. So who knows? It'll be interesting to see what happens. And I know that we're preparing as if he's going to be the same old Ray that has been the Pro Bowl for the last decade. So there's nothing, you know, taking our focus off that. And they've got a good team. You know, if Ray doesn't play and doesn't play the whole game or whatever the capacity is that he's in, I mean, their linebackers are great players as well. Those guys are experienced. They've played. They've been playing a lot lately because he hasn't been. So it's a situation whoever we see is going to be, you know, playing and playing well, and it's a playoff environment. It's a deal where you don't go out and hope things work out. If you want it to go well, you kind of go out and just take control and make it work.
You sound like you grew up in a coach's family. Last thing before we end the segment, AJ, what's it like being in that family with all those Schmitz?
It's something that, you know, all my uncles really creeped me out when I was a kid. And so, I mean, I can't imagine why Mark Schmidt and Tom Schmidt and so on and so forth would ever scare a little kid. But, you know, once I kind of got to, you know, appreciate the Schmidt tradition and culture of Jasper, Indiana, you know, kind of grew on me. So ever since then, I've been part of Phil Schmidt's 500 escapades and everything else. So it's always an adventure going down to Jasper, or, you know, whether – everybody comes up to Indy for a get-together or whatever it is. It's always, you always count on, you know, cold beer and good stories. So it's, you know, not a bad way to go about it. So it's always fun when everybody gets together and starts reliving some of the war stories, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a great family. And having grown up with six brothers and two sisters in Jasper, I understand that. And having gone back to coach basketball, I had Mark and a few Schmitz on my case a few times during games.
Lucky you.
I understand it, but they're – it's a great family, and you're very fortunate. You got a good mom and dad, and you're in a nice position. I know you'd like to be healthy, but you're at the highest level, and we just wish good things for you going forward, AJ.
Well, I do appreciate that, and you know, to your point, I am on the shelf, but you know, I'm excited to get back out there, and I'll be, you know, full tilt next season. Hopefully, be cleared sometime this spring, this summer, to kind of be fully involved, fully participating, and so forth, and really just hit the ground running next August whenever we get to Anderson for training camp, and you know, hopefully never look back.
Well, have a great playoff run. You'll learn a lot. You'll be able to put it to use next year, and we appreciate you having on the show.
All right, fellas. Hey, thanks for taking the time, and I appreciate it. And, you know, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
Can't talk now, you mute. We got that old little blind deaf mute girl. Old Yeller. What's her name? Old
Helen Yeller.
No, old Helen Yeller. Old.
Don't you guys mean Helen Keller?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back once again to the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and, you know, got some thoughts on my Purdue Boilermakers. I know some of you IU fans love to hear about it, so I'm just going to go ahead and rant for just a little bit, you know. After a horrendous, horrendous New Year's Day, watching the Boilermakers, I'm not even going to say they were playing football, watching them go through the act of playing football, I was pretty disgusted, and also wondered, you know, if you're a senior, fine, you're going your way, but if you're a up underclassman and you have Coach Hazel in the stands, do you not use it as a tryout? Do you not use it as a possibly securing your position? I mean, I'm sure that Coach Darrell Hazel is going to come in and he's going to wipe the slate clean and everyone's going to have a fair shake. But then it, you know, it got better after that. Coach Matt Painter made me eat my words, and which I got, of course, a text from Coach K after the game, reminding me about ripping him. And you know, he deserved to be ripped, but right now he deserves to be praised. I'm a pickled fan, and you know, I think Michael Lewis said it best when he said in his next life he wants to come back as a fan because fans are always right, and we are. What do you think,
Ding,
Coach
ding,
K?
Ding, ding, ding. You're a pickled fan. You've been in too much vinegar, Joe.
Hey, I've got bad news.
What's that?
We just lost the Ed Davender prison signed thing on eBay. Dang, I knew we
Well, you got up the bid. You mean it got sold?
It must have, yeah.
Gosh darn it. Hey, Joe, really, though, Matt, Coach Painter did a really good job getting that team prepared for Illinois. And one thing I noticed about Illinois – it looked like what I saw last year in the Big Ten season, that their softness, lack of physical play came out, and Purdue just played physical basketball. And we can say who had more talent or can they shoot or whether A.J. Byrd does what – but they made the plays down the stretch. Illinois stepped up, hit some big threes, but when it was time to block out on a critical free throw, maybe two of them, and when it was time to make the play, getting a rebound or playing defense, Illinois couldn't got it done. So I tell you what, Gross has got to be going back, and he's got to be saying, you know, I looked at all the tapes from last year, and I saw this stuff last year, and we can't let this soft play creep into us because, as Don Fisher said, the Big Ten is physical basketball, and if you're not going to come physical, you're going to have a tough time. And I thought Matt – Coach Painter had him in the game. They needed to be defensively in order to get that win.
Well, he must be watching last year's Illinois tapes, not this year Purdue tapes, because why would you play Purdue man-to-man? Why would you not sink a zone and say, okay, bad shooters, go ahead and try it? Why would he not do that, Coach K?
I think from a coaching standpoint, and people are welcome to disagree with me, but I think I'm right. He's trying to build toughness in his defense, and that's why. And he knows that if he counters that right now, it's going to lead them back into some bad habits, standing around. And when you play good man-to-man defense, whether you are helping and recovering, which Purdue does a lot, or whether you're rotating multiple people to different positions like Butler does, you've got to stay focused, you've got to stay low, you've got to be talking, and you've got to move. And a lot of times, unfortunately, people grow up and they believe that a zone, and I've even heard coaches say this, that a zone doesn't require as much effort, and that's baloney. If you play a good zone, I'll give you an example for those listeners, a Rick Pitino-type zone. You're trapping the corners, you're trapping up top, you're giving up certain things in order to get them in a position for breakouts. So there's a lot of different things that goes into the defense, but that may be part of it, Joe, and I don't know for sure, but that might be part of it. He's worried about bad habits coming back.
But, you know, when you're playing a Purdue team that's struggling, don't you got to do what you got to do to get the win? Because now they get to go to the Ohio State University this weekend, which is going to be a very tall task for them.
Well, don't you think they would have got that win had they blocked out? And it wasn't always on the zone. It was situations where they had opportunities to get offensive rebounds and didn't go get it. They had block out on free throws. I mean, I'm yelling that at sixth graders. Block out the shooter. Block out the guy next to you. I mean, those are small little things that most of our listeners maybe aren't focused on seeing, but that's what you got to look for, because that's the difference. That's the difference in Butler beating IU. That's the difference in actually Iowa getting beat by IU a couple of times. IU stole the pass or stole the ball off missed free throws. So you really. It's the little things, Joe. I understand what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing that that could have been an approach, because you got to question Purdue's ability to shoot the outside shot. I mean, I agree with you, and at some point you got to say make the shot. But I think he's trying to develop a mentality that he looks to have as they go through the Big Ten season.
Well, you know, you said you coached sixth grade basketball, and was last night your Mount Vernon game? How did you do?
No, we didn't play yet in the new year. I stay involved with basketball. Both my dad and I do, because we love the game, and they're, you know, teaching young kids is a little bit different than teaching high school kids or individual workouts with college age kids, but it's still the same basic stuff, and it keeps you involved with young people. We haven't started our season in the second half yet, but we go into it 6-2, so we've done all right.
Let me ask you a question, and then I'll answer it. The 100-year reunion for Jasper basketball this weekend, and you probably know a majority of these people. Who would you be most excited to meet?
I think that anybody from the 50s, the 40s, the 60s, I started to know the players in the 70s and 80s, came back and coached in the 90s, and was there a little bit in 2000. So there were a lot of great players that came through. You know, we've had a number of Indiana All-Stars, and I was very fortunate to help develop three of them. And we've had a number of All-State players. We've had a number of teams that have done well in the tournament, 20 game winners on the season, which is a great accomplishment when you're playing just 20 regular season games a year. So it's going to be the Bobby Whites, the people like that, that Slick talked about, and there's more. I mean, I've got a list of guys written down that I want to at least to maybe have an opportunity to say hi to, and you know, you hear about them, but you didn't have a chance to meet them.
Yeah, I'd say the one I'd like to meet most, because I've heard so much about him, is Bob White. And where is he at these days? Do you know?
I don't know. I know he lives out of town, but if people don't know, he was the little scoot. Little tiny guard who had energy galore that played for the 1949 state champions. And I know people are saying 1949. Well, he's still here, and that's still quite an accomplishment, because it was the one class system. But that'll be pretty exciting for people to come together and just talk and see how everybody's doing. And I'm sure the Glory Days song would be perfect for every conversation that goes on in that room. And I'm sure that if you're there, Joe, you'll probably make your time as a freshman and JV player much greater than it was, but I'll try to listen so I can get it corrected.
I won't be talking about my playing days. I plan on having an audio recorder and a video recorder and mark it down for posterity for the Coach K and Joe Show and Jasper Today. So tonight, big game, Jasper versus Vincennes, always a heated rivalry. And the only thing I regret about this is I was going to try to arrange to have Susan Albrand on to make a prediction. Do you think that her loyalty, she still has some underlying loyalties to Vincennes, or do you think she would pick her husband in Jasper?
I don't think there's any doubt she has underlying loyalties, but she'd go with her husband because she loves him and she puts him right in there. But she is a big green and white fan.
Now I don't know about what you just said about her and her husband, because why has she not switched to a Purdue fan?
You know
Jason's not switching.
That's totally different, and you know that's different, and that would be sacrilege. So, hey, you know, Joe, that the Vincennes Lincoln Jasper game over the years has been a hard-fought, physical go at it, and the winner of that game usually gets put in a position to win the Big Eight Conference. And Vincennes has always come ready and to play, whether it's there or at the Wildcat Gym, but I know during my time at Jasper, we had a couple of games where they came over to Jasper, and we had almost 5,000 people in the stands, and we went over there and had that place packed. There was a little intensity, a little, I don't want to say hatred, but ill feeling towards the teams. They had gotten physical, and the coaches had, you know, Gene Miller was there, great, great coach, and we may have made some comments in the paper that riled the fans and got them out to the gym, but it was a lot of fun playing that game, and as I said, it usually led to the Big Eight champion. What's interesting is we'll have Coach Gable, Jasper Wildcat boys basketball coach, coming on in a little bit, and we'll be able to talk to him about that.
Yeah, it should be a good game. It always is. It's always nice, too, that, you know, that game means something. I mean, we've lost so many of our rivalries because of class basketball. And since they're still in our conference, you know, that is a game that actually means something. And, you know,
what a great job by A.J. Eads. Was he well-spoken, knew what he was talking about, giving us some insight? I mean, I was really, really impressed with our interview with him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, if you know Dave Eads, you know, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. You know, and you got to admit, he was always an eloquent history teacher as far as that goes. Now, on the football field, sometimes he wasn't so eloquent, you know.
Because you didn't work hard.
Well, you know, that was his opinion.
Go home early from practice because you had to get out to 3D to be a stock boy with me. And so you wanted to get out a little early so you get out there and sweep those floors.
Oh, I always had a blast sweeping the floors, but you know, that should be a good game. But, you know, also tonight, Southridge is going to try to rebound after their only loss of the season against Gibson Southern, a Gibson Southern team that hasn't fared too well this season as of yet.
And, well, I still think Southridge is a good team. I think that they need to shore up some things with blockouts. I know when they played Springs Valley, I attended that game, and I thought they struggled with some little things. I said they were a good team. They had some scores, but they weren't blocking out. They used their height to get the rebound. And you know, Springs Valley was shooting a lot of perimeter shots. But when a team moves the ball inside and out and goes in 10, 8, 7, 5 feet, you better be there to block out, or they're going to get rebounds, and it's going to cause a lot of problems for you offensively.
Yeah, they're also going to be without Scott Thompson. He apparently has a sprained ankle. He's one of their bigger players, can jump out of the gym. I know that because my son high jumps against him, and Scott can get up there. But, yeah, it's been great. to watch him because I know his father real well, and I know his father's real proud of him. And but hey, I'm gonna have to go call our next guest.
You gotta do the technical part, Joe. And, go get Gable on the line so we can talk a little Jasper basketball.
So you're allowed to talk anything but politics, okay?
Well, we won't get into too many social issues yet. We're gonna wait till we get more people calling in, and so we can get their crusty opinion. Just real quickly before John, Coach Gable gets on the line with us, just talk a little bit about high school basketball in the area. I was able to go watch the Bossy Winter Classic last week, and Harrison, Evansville Harrison, beat a team from Ohio to remain undefeated. Bossy of Evansville with Jaquan Lyle, one of the top 15 juniors in the country, in some rating bureaus. He and his Bossy Bulldogs pulled back even, took a lead in the third quarter going into the fourth, but couldn't hold on, and they were beat by Marshall of Ohio, the number one team in Ohio. So it really was a great night of basketball. Evansville North played a game against Bowman Academy from up north, who's been in the state finals before in the class system. And then Princeton was also a winner earlier in the day against a team out of Madison, Madison Shaw. So there was some good basketball that went on in our conferences in the area. If you follow Southern Indiana basketball, and we know a lot of people do, we've got a lot of, as I said last week, we've got great basketball. We really do. It's just a matter of these teams getting some consistency on their games. You know, when you run into the holidays, practice is limited. A lot of them go into tournaments, and it can be difficult for them to keep improving. They get better on the court during the game, but they struggle getting better as a team in doing the things that they like to do. So Big 8, Vincennes leads the Big 8 right now. Again, Southridge, a solid team in the PAC. And I think Joe's back with Coach Gable, and we're going to go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I gotta work on my game.
No. Don't think of it as work. The whole point is just to enjoy yourself.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back with Jasper head basketball coach John Gable. John, got a big game tonight against the Vincennes Owls. Give us a little insight into that game.
All right, Coach, thanks for having me on, first of all. Well, obviously, Vincennes is off to a great start. Their only loss was to Evansville Wright, so I think it was a three-point loss. And, you know, they're sitting 8-1 right now, and they're playing really well. And they have that Avery Mickens, who's one of the best players in Southern Indiana, I believe. He can play outside. He can post inside. He just poses just a lot of a variety of challenges for us defensively.
You know, John, Coach, this game is not the end-all in the conference, but it's a pivotal game in the conference because usually the winner of this game between Vincennes and Jasper kind of moves up into that position to win the conference. Not every year, but I know during my time at Jasper, this was always a big game. But, you know, Mount Vernon's reared their head a little bit. You've got, I think, one loss in the conference, so you're right there. When you look at this game, how are you preparing your players? Hey, this is a conference game. We just go out and do our work. Is there any added preparation, or are you mentally talking to these kids psychologically to get them ready?
Well, you know, we try to approach every game with equal importance, but it, you know, it'd be hard to disguise the fact that, you know, not only is Vincennes a big rival of ours, but they're also a conference opponent. You know, we couldn't honestly say that we haven't noticed that, but I try not to put extra pressure on the kids by bringing that up often, and they have enough pressure on themselves from home and community, recognizing that. But you know, going back to what you said earlier, we did have one conference loss, and that was to Mount Vernon, and they're undefeated right now, and obviously they're in the hunt for the conference title. And looking back to last year, I think we ended up 5-1 in the conference, and Vincennes was able to beat us at home last year in a close-fought game, and they ended up 6-0. So, you know, the winner of this game tonight isn't crowned conference champ, but it obviously puts you in the driver's seat, or at least in a position where you can be fighting for that title.
Yeah, and I understand that. Believe me, I've been there, but it's a great game because it's a great atmosphere too. I mean, whether you're playing at Jasper or at Lincoln, it's a great tradition, and it's a great game for your kids to grow as basketball players mentally and physically on the court.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, there's really even though there's a lot of, sometimes I don't want to call it bitterness, but there's some pretty heated, and you remember those days, there's some pretty heated exchanges between Jasper and Vincennes in any high school contest. But you know, our communities are very similar in the fact that we both spend a lot of resources and time and money on our young people, and both very proud of the traditions of our athletic programs. And they both have very strong, you know, Jasper and Vincennes, Lincoln, both have very strong histories in basketball and a very proud tradition. And you know, when these communities go at each other in a game like tonight, it's always intense. And like you said, it is an opportunity for our young men to grow. If you're going to win a sectional, and you've been there too, you have to be able to play in a hostile environment. You have to be able to handle pressure, because the pressure really gets turned up at tournament time. And so this is a good test for us tonight, a very good team on their floor in a hostile environment with a little bit of added pressure of the conference record at stake.
Coach, before we talk a little bit about your players, your roster and things, as you look at your team, you've got a mix of some young guys. You're very physical. I've seen you play twice. You've got some physical players. Right now, there may be some struggle shooting the ball on the perimeter, and you know, all you can do is work to get better, and we know how tough that can be, because you got to get the confidence in the young men as well as getting the feet ready and receiving the ball. But your team has the capability, and you know, please share with us, when you look at your team, they got to really come to play defense, and they've got to use their assets, their physical ability, the big strength that they have, in order to be in a position to get wins.
Yeah, you know, the defensive thing is the defensive end is the thing I'm most proud of this team this year. We going into that last game with Evansville Central, we were giving up 48 points a game, and I think we rotate well for the most part, and I think we rebound pretty well for the most part. We close out on the ball in most cases, you know, as well as can be expected, and we're not a particularly quick team, but they have bought into the idea that, you know, team defense and shutting opponents down defensively is really going to be our biggest chance to having success. And I think also combined with that low scoring that we've been giving up, we've become a very patient team offensively. We're trying to work the ball inside and take advantage of our physical players like Mark Giesler and Austin Aulis and Philip Hipschman, and we're trying to control the boards, and we'll pass the ball 5, 6, 7 times, a lot of times without being asked to, and looking for that best shot. And so if we'll continue to be patient and look for our game to start on the inside, hopefully they'll open up a better shot and scoring opportunities around the perimeter. And, you know, we did struggle early, and we've had some guys like Nick Gilbert, for example, that have come around now and have caught fire a little bit from the perimeter at Cortland Betts, and hopefully Nate Messier will be back this week. So we do have some capability of scoring on the perimeter, but we do have to keep understanding that it has to start on the inside first.
Yeah, and you made some great points as you talked about, you know, the team and what they need to do. And the thing that our listeners need to understand, and Jasper fans and basketball fans in general, it's a mental preparation and repetitions physically to change that mental approach that, you know, the shot that normally presents itself that you can get any time, it's teaching those young men and getting them to buy in and focus on, you know, I'm not going to take this shot. Even though I'm standing open, I can get this shot anytime. We can get a better shot. We can get this thing inside. We can draw a foul. We can go at their key players and hopefully get them out of the game. So it just as you work on that daily, that really is a mental approach, buy-in by your players to listen and understand not an open shot, but a good shot.
Well, I think I agree with you, and that's the most difficult thing to teach in basketball, because when you talk to a young man about passing up a shot, what he hears in a lot of cases and what his family might hear is you're telling that kid he's not allowed to shoot. And you know as well as I do that that's not the case, but when you're in a game where it's going to come down to the last couple of possessions, you do want to take the highest percentage shot to give yourself the best chance to win. And but I just actually had this conversation yesterday at practice with Cole Summersheim, and you know, Cole as a younger man was a pretty accurate perimeter shooter for us, and you know, he's still shooting pretty decently, but he actually in practice yesterday a couple of times passed up a couple of shots with an, you know, with the it looked like with the intent of finding that better shot like you were talking about. And so I both praised him for it, but I also reminded him that there are going to be opportunities and situations where we need him to knock those down for us.
And Coach, I'm going to back you up on this 110% to the moms and dads listening and to the young people listening. Coaches are not telling the young man not to shoot. I mean, it doesn't matter what grade. You always want young men, young ladies to look for their shot, but you're trying to teach them the difference between just an open shot and a good shot. And when it is coming down to the critical possessions, like you said, the smart teams, the teams that have the leadership that can get it done, you end up knocking that team off that people didn't think you could, and you end up winning a sectional championship. Coach, can you tell us a little bit about some of your personnel?
Yeah, well, you know, our main player this year, you know, for the most part on the inside has been Mark Giesler, and that's no surprise to anyone. You know, Mark stands 6'4", and he's a three-year varsity player now, two-year varsity starter. And you know, his first love is baseball, and he spends a lot of time in the offseason, especially summer, working on baseball. But he also, in the fall this year, worked really hard on his footwork and on becoming a better offensive threat for us. And so, you know, a lot of our offense revolves around getting Mark the ball, and a lot of people have obviously figured that out. But we also have some other nice seniors, and Nate Messier. Nate was leading us in scoring until he got the high ankle sprain a couple weeks back. So we're hoping to get Nate on the floor a little bit tonight against Vincennes and start to get him rehabbed from that injury. But Nate, in five games, Nate went, or I believe it was six games, I should say, Nate went to the foul line, Nate Messier, over 50 times. And I've never had a player do that quickly. And so we miss his trips to the foul line, and we miss his leadership on the floor, and hope to get him back soon. And I've already mentioned Cole Summersheim as a senior, and Cole's a defensive specialist for us. We feel comfortable about putting Cole on any score on any team, and he is a, you know, a football player at heart and trade, but he brings a lot of those toughness characteristics to the basketball floor for us. Nick Gobert ran point guard for us last year, another senior of ours. Nick Gobert ran point guard for us last year as a junior and handled the ball handled himself very well last year, and this year has been moved more to a shooting guard situation, but a position, but been forced back into the point guard with the injury to Nate Messier. So hopefully, as Nate comes back and we can get Nick moved back to his shooting guard position, he'll be a little bit more comfortable. And then our fifth senior on the squad is Devin Traylor. Devin took a couple years off of basketball, came back as a junior, and he's just a utility player for us. He works really hard. He's a tremendous athlete. He can run and jump as well as anyone on the team. And he's another guy like Cole Summersheim. I wouldn't hesitate to have Devin defend anyone on our schedule. He's just an intense defender and an intense basketball player.
Well, you know, coaches, as you look at the season and there's a lot of basketball to play. You know, they pushed it back a little bit when you start. You've had to change your schedule around. The one good thing I can tell you about this Vincennes game is that when I was at Jasper, we used to play Central on a Friday night and Vincennes on a Saturday night. And you talk about trying to get ready for a conference champion, potentially a conference championship tilt, and you got to get ready to go play Central. So we were able to get that adjusted. I'm sorry we couldn't do anything with the Boonville-Southridge games, but folks have to understand that these kids have to mentally jump from one team to another, their personnel. And when you're missing what I call a little scooter bug in Messier, and to have him on the floor, he creates matchup challenges. He puts defenders in a position where they're helping and they're playing from behind, and people have to help, so to find other people in that elbow and block area. And you've been to the top, Coach. You've been a state champion, and so you understand what it takes. And I know you're going to keep going with this. Tell us a little bit about your coaching staff.
Well, the number one guy, and really he's not, I don't consider him my assistant coach. I consider him more my co-coach, is Jason Albrand. Jason was a, I think he played before, I guess he played for Ed Yarbrough before you got the job, Kenny, but you know Jason, and he, I know it's not a football, or it's a football term and not a basketball term, but he is our offensive coordinator. Jason is a great teacher of the game, and he understands positioning and flow of the game, and he understands the fundamentals of basketball as well as anyone that I've been, had the pleasure of being around. So he, in a lot of ways, I try to stay out of his way when he's teaching offense, and I've learned a lot from him. And he's a good friend of mine and obviously a very good coach. And so, I, like I said, I consider him my co-coach. And our JV coach is Jeremy Wolf. And Jeremy, when I came to Jasper, was the seventh grade coach, and I asked him to be our freshman coach. And he did just a great job with that freshman level, and now he's worked his way to the JV level. And I've never worked with a guy who learns as fast as Jeremy does. And he's very passionate, oftentimes very intense, but Jeremy works very hard at the game, and he has turned into a fine teacher of basketball as well. And then Jared Land, who coached under Coach LaGrange a few years back, now is back coaching our freshman team and having a very nice season with our freshman squad, even though we've moved four freshmen to the JV team. He still, I believe, has two losses on the year and is doing a tremendous job. And that rounds up, I think, most of the high school level coaches.
Well, one thing that the Jasper fans and the other teams in the area need to realize, Jasper's got some good young players. They're being well-schooled and well-taught. And, Coach, you come from a great family. You know, Mike and Andy and Gable, all those guys down here in Evansville, competitors, hard workers. I've met several and just been so impressed. So I appreciate you coming on. I wish you luck with Vincennes. I'm not going to be able to get there, but I will hope to take in a couple more Wildcat games because we love the black and gold. And so I wish you luck as you go forward in the season.
Coach, I appreciate the time, and thanks for all your comments. Appreciate the show, too. Enjoy it.
Well, we're going to bring you back throughout the season. I hope you'll be a guest, and we certainly appreciate it. Have a happy new year. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Hey, I just want to say to all you other drivers out there, if you smell a delicious, crispy smell after the race, it's not your tailpipe. It's a little bit of shake and then...
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back with Du Bois County Broadcasting Sports Director Kurt Guxell. Kurt, did you hear the bad news earlier in the show?
Hopefully there wasn't any bad news.
We lost the eBay bid for the Ed Davender prison signed uniform.
Oh my gosh!
I think Joe wanted that a little bit more than we did, Kurt. And the fact that you
tragic.
And I did not offer to give any money. Hey, on that shake and bake, remember the commercial where Loretta Lynn's kids would say, it ain't chicken, it's shake and bake. Oh, memories. Memories of early TV.
Man, you've been watching too much TV.
Hey, what do we got going on with the Raiders, Kurt, before we get to other things? Let's talk a little Southridge Raider.
They played Tecumseh tonight, and Coach, they dropped the ball their last time out down in Modern Day on the 21st. They were very good.
Yeah, you know, when I watched them against Springs Valley, I think they're still a good team. But one thing I noticed, Valley was shooting a lot of those perimeter shots, and they didn't have to block out as much as those balls popped off to them. But the little things probably, you know, they're kids. They get on a streak, and they forget that all those little things, every time you play another team who's prepared a little differently on the road, you know, things just change. Just like when Jasper goes into Vincennes, I believe it's at Vincennes, it'll be a different environment and they'll have to do some different things.
Oh, I think so, too. Modern day has got that big post player we talked about, Tyler Walsh, being pretty good, and he was that night. And then you compound things when you don't shoot very well, which they didn't that night, and you could be in for some big-time trouble against a team like Modern Day.
Now, what's the word on the Thompson kid? How long is he going to be out for?
Probably just this weekend, sprained an ankle, and he was really coming on. I mean, he's a really good athlete, and he's played really well here recently, so they'll be without him, and it'll hurt him tomorrow night, especially because Dubois is pretty physical and tall inside, so that'll be a pretty good matchup for the Raiders tomorrow with Dubois after Tecumseh tonight.
Hey, Kurt, were you able to listen earlier when we had Don Fisher on? Wasn't he? If you were able to hear it, he was a treat.
Yeah, he's you know, you just, not only does he do his job very well, but just the set of eyes that he has to be around for all that, all those games and all those seasons and the basketball, the football. I mean, he has seen a lot. You know, and he's seen a lot on the inside. You know, we've all followed it, but the stuff, I'm sure it would be great to sit around with Don in a, you know, a semi-informal setting just to hear some of the stories that he maybe could tell about the people he's come across and just things like that. So, yeah, Fish is always good. He's always good with his time and just a really good guy.
I loved how he handled some of the questions where I left the door open just a little bit. And, you know, he just diplomatically knew how to answer it by giving us good insight and giving us the answer to make us think a little bit, but without sounding too critical. So that was great. And then we had A.J. Eads on, and, boy, I mean, here's a guy that has connections to the southern Indiana area through the Schmidt family, and David's taught and coached at Jasper, and he played at Greenwood, went on to be a outstanding player at Iowa. I think he finished 42nd or 46th, 43rd all-time in career tackles, and now he finds himself in the NFL. Injured, yes, but still in the NFL. Man, I mean, you got to wake up every day and say, this is all right.
Hey, and Kurt, we talked a little bit about also if he lived in Jasper, we would have had an A.J. Eads, Luke Schmidt backfield. Now, how would that have been?
Yeah, and Luke probably would have carried the ball 42 times a game. So.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about A.J. that people always said, and guys, you may know more about him than I do, your acumen with football is higher. I always heard people talk about how tough he was. He was smart, and he was tough. And just reading the things about him at Iowa, three-time academic All-American, and just listening to him talk, I think he gets it. I think he understands.
Well, his joke can attest to anybody that's related to a guy like Davies. You wouldn't expect anything different as far as toughness is concerned. I mean, being just a little guy and following some of those practices and being down there and seeing how Dave coached, the apple didn't fall too far from the tree there, I wouldn't think.
No, it didn't. He was a tough coach. He was, on the football field, he was a maniac. But in the classroom, that's what Kenny touched on earlier, a really good teacher. They took both jobs serious, so.
How about Heritage Hills? They had their little tournament over the Christmas period, I think. You know, correct me, guys, were they 1-4 in that tournament, 1-3? He's still, you know, Matt was on last week, and he's still trying to take that young team and get them to take care of the ball possession-wise. They can score, but probably sometimes.
How you doing? Can you have girls clothes in there?
Good.
He's trying to find their way with the young team, and they base a lot of their game on shooting the ball well, you know, and sometimes if they don't do that, they're going to have some trouble. But for the most part, I think he'll get things going here in the second half. I know Matt coaches those guys really well, and I think they'll be all right.
Well, I don't want him to forget the defensive end because they're young, and you don't want them to pick up bad habits that take a long time to get rid of as they go through. But basketball is, you know, I was amazed, Kurt, at the number of Christmas holiday-type tournaments where guys didn't just play two games like the old holiday tournament, played three and four games. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, no preparation, just bring them back and go play.
Well, that's what I was talking about last week. It's just not these, you know, 14 deals. These are these monster tournaments, and it compounded with the fact that it was over Christmas break, with Christmas kind of separating some of them. Then you had some bad weather, and you had some of those tournaments. There was one in Terre Haute, that big Pizza Hut Classic, where teams at one time or another may have not showed up for their game. So you had a forfeit situation. You had an open slot in your tournament. It was a mess, and again, I just don't – some people like to do it. I just would not be one to want to get involved in that. I'm not a coach or whatever, but I just think those things are a mess.
Yeah, Lagodi got Trinity Lutheran, decided they weren't going to stay around for the finals, and Lagodi got a 2-0 victory in that tournament.
And you would never think about doing that. Like tonight, you know, Jasper would never say, you know, Lincoln, we're not showing up, because it's a regular season game, and that's why I advocate – that high school basketball should be played on a special, you know, on a special format. And these tournaments just drive me crazy.
Well, like I said last week, one time is fun, but after that, I would have no interest in it. And I definitely wouldn't have an interest in the 3 or 4 game format. I know they're trying to squeeze things in from a schedule standpoint, but I don't see it, and it's ridiculous. And the only thing I can think, Kurt, is these teams that packed up their bus and left, or their cars, whatever they came in, were they told the format was different to begin with, and then it changed on them? I mean, who the heck does that? Who the heck commits, signs contracts, and then picks up and leaves the other team standing, literally standing?
Well, and I think, well, again, the factor of that whole deal was you had weather concerns. Whether to get the kids back before the snow really hit, or we couldn't come back the next day because of the snow if you drove and you didn't stay overnight. I think, you know, to their benefit or to their, you know, helping them out a little bit, I know that it wasn't the ideal situation. But in that same token, though, there's another party there. It's the other team. You almost owe them a little bit to try to get there. Maybe your fans can't come. Maybe we have to just, you know, find a way to get the guys there. But I think you owe something to somebody else if you elect to be in one of those deals. But I think that the weather was the main culprit in some of those teams not playing or picking up and leaving and going somewhere else. But I know that caused a lot of trouble with that Pizza Hut tournament, that Wabash Valley Classic, which is one of the oldest and one of the better-run tournaments. And I know the Graver Post has run great. All these tournaments are really run well. But it's just a lot of basketball, and I don't know how quality the basketball is. But, it was just a weird situation when you threw in that weather and stuff.
Well, in the end, when you sign a contract, your yes means yes. And
yes, I
was shocked when I saw all that. And, you know, I just remember back in the day, you know, when we were young, Kurt, we just walked 20 miles to the game. Well, we never did that, but
Didn't
coach walk home from Huntingburg one time after a sectional or a regional or something like that?
Well, that's what they say.
He probably didn't. Somebody picked him up. I remember old Pete. I coached against him when he was at Worthington, and I was a brand-new coach in high school. Hey, we're going to be closing out the live portion of the show in just a few minutes. Joe, do you have anything you want to hit on before we close the live portion out?
I'm still disappointed over the loss of the Ed Davender prison-signed uniform, so no, not a whole lot.
Hey, well, Coach, I know you guys had Slick on again, Slick Weber, and I want to commend him for what he's doing, getting the guys together and promoting basketball. And the one thing, you know, it's going to be a great night, and there's going to be a lot of guys back, but just the enthusiasm a guy like that and his group has had for Jasper basketball in this day and age when a lot of people really don't care about it, whether it be players, whether it be fans, maybe even, you know, coaches down the line. It's amazing that those guys still have the passion for it. And there's nothing greater than that.
You need those people in your program. And, you know, for coaches out there, be open. Even if you get a little criticism once in a while or a question, be open to those people because they help you bring enthusiasm and publicity and things to the game, because, you know, just the way it turns a negative or the way it turns apathetic, you can turn it around to enthusiasm. And Kurt, you know, whether you agreed with everything we did when my staff was there, we always were trying to find ways to get people pumped up about basketball. And we came in and you know, we probably created some of that Vincent's controversy. But, you know, you got to get people excited, a reason to come out, not just the parents. You got to get the students involved. They got to play a role in it. And that takes the administration, not just the coach. But the Slick Webbers, Kevin Manleys, Kurt Gooksells, all those kind of people, the Joe Milligans in a very small way, sorry, help get that going.
Well, I just think it's great, and it's just super. I mean, anything you can do for, you know, the history in the past. I know you and your dad and Terry Tucker came up to Southridge a few years ago when they had the anniversary to the gym, and all those former players went baseline to baseline, and they yeah. talked about it. We went out after the event and just sat around and talked about it. And, you know, that's what you know, helps the game. And a lot of times that, you know, even overshadows the game, which is great, and lets people know that people, you know, still play this game and people still, you know, care about it. So, you know, hats off to Slick and those guys. And hopefully they have a great night and talk a lot of basketball. And, you know, and maybe, just maybe, some of those people that have not gone to games or are not involved in it, you know, reconnect a little bit. And I think that's a big reason why they're having this, you know, and bring some more enthusiasm back for not only Jasper basketball, but just basketball and maybe sports in general.
Yeah, and Kurt, it's a great game to watch. And even when your team may not be playing well, if those kids are making the effort, putting it out there, the more you stay involved, the better, the more excited they're going to get, and they're going to find a way to get over the hump. I talked about this earlier, Kurt. I'm jumping on you like I always do, jumping over to the NFL. The quarterback class of 1983, Kelly, Elway, Marino, and to a lesser extent, the Houston, Texas coach, Gary Kubiak, and this just wonderful playoff-bound rookie class. Give us your thoughts on both those classes, and I know this rookie class has a long way to go, but just your thoughts about them having three teams that they've got in the playoffs.
I think it's unbelievable to have Luck in there with the Colts, RG3, and a guy that a lot of people didn't talk about at the beginning, Russell Wilson, who may be the best of the lot. I know this is blasphemous to talk about that here in Indiana, but Russell Wilson, I mean, I don't think anybody in the league throws a better ball than he does. And he's kind of a bristled and grizzled because he went and played minor league baseball where it's almost every man for himself, came back to Wisconsin, played great football. But I love all three of those guys. And it's harder to play football in the National Football League at the quarterback spot now than it ever has because you've got so much on your plate. You're out there directing the team. You're out there reading the defenses. You're out there studying the game every day because they're trying to tear your head off because the athletes are bigger, stronger, faster. They're trying to get in your head. And anybody that can play that position right now in 2012-2013 at that high level, it may be the toughest position to play in all sports. And those guys are playing at an extremely high level, and my hats are off to them. I mean, it's great to watch. And I just love watching those guys play because they all mean a lot to their team in all kinds of different ways.
Well, I think Shanahan was gone if they don't turn it around with RG3. That's my opinion, and people out there may not agree. I had some people come up the other day. They're listeners to the show every week, and they said, well, we just don't agree with some of the things you said. I said, well, call in. Call in and tell us you don't agree.
Well,
it's your talk show, but I think Shanahan might have been on the bubble. But how the Washington Redskins got it turned around, that group of veterans came together and backed the rookie quarterback. And just think, Kurt, just think, Joe, how close they were in that Dallas game as it got down to crunch time in possibly losing their opportunity to be in the playoffs. And poor hard luck Tony Romo, who I still think is a decent quarterback, just if there's a way to have a mistake, it happens to Tony.
Well, I agree, Coach, as far as the way the quarterbacks and the coaches are joined. You got a guy like Andy Reid, who's had all those great years in Philadelphia. He hitched his lot to a guy like Michael Vick, didn't turn out very well. Different coaches with in different circumstances. Bud Adams forced Vince Young on Jeff Fisher. Next thing you know, Fisher, one of the best coaches in the league, out of the game, or out of the Tennessee Titan organization because of a bad quarterback coach mix.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, if you can, whether I think Mike Shanahan was all on board with either Luck or RG3, and it happened where it worked out for him. But these coaches, again, if you're going to be expected to do a job, you better have somebody that you're comfortable with or somebody that can do the job, or you're going to be gone, whether by your getting out or by somebody saying that they don't want you anymore.
So Andy Reid gets hired at Kansas City. You think that was a good place for him? Does he? Are there draft picks sitting there that we don't know about? Is there something there that Andy Reid found out or knew about that he said, you know, I can turn this thing around?
Yes, they have very good barbecue ribs in Kansas City, and that will suit Andy Reid just fine. What Charlie Weiss left as the offensive coordinator, they had to get somebody to take his place in that department. No, Kansas City, I mean, as bad as they've been in the recent years, they're still the football city that just packs Arrowhead, and they, you know, they've got a good culture there as far as fans and how they feel about that team. But I think it is hard to tell. And some coaches, you know, Andy Reid's been in a pressure cooker. You coach in Philly, you play in Philly like Roland and those guys did. Maybe you want to go to a place that says, hey, you know, maybe if I get the 500 or I eke into the playoffs, maybe they'll be fine with me for a while. Maybe you want to jump out of that frying pan a little bit and go to something that's not quite as stressful and maybe a place where they appreciate you more. And maybe they've made a great offer that he probably didn't think he'd get in Arizona or a few of those other places. With a coach and trying to find a fit, who knows? But evidently Andy Reid likes that situation better than perhaps the Arizona situation or somewhere else.
Here's the issue. What about quarterbacks for these teams? I mean, you look at Arizona after Warner left. You look at Kansas City. They keep trying to piecemeal somebody in. And I hate to say this, Kurt, you're going to get mad, but your Miami Dolphins are no better. What is going on with that franchise?
Well, who are the Dolphins or the Chiefs?
The Dolphins.
Well, the Dolphins are all right now at the quarterback spot. They drafted a pretty good rookie in Tannehill. They need to build around him. And they were able to get Tannehill because they finished real, real low. But these teams that finish, you either need to win it or just be awful. Because if you're awful, then you're going to draft those good quarterbacks. But you go in the middle of the pack, you're now dealing with free agent quarterbacking. And they put their lot, the Chiefs did, in Castle, who filled in for Tom Brady. I didn't think they got a big enough sample size. Just like the Seahawks are paying a boatload of money to Matt Flynn, a guy that filled in for Aaron Rodgers in a game that didn't mean anything because they were sitting Rodgers. And he goes nuts and passes for 10,000 yards in one game. And the Seahawks signed, and then to Pete Carroll's credit, he goes, we drafted Russell Wilson. We're going to have a competition here. And you see where that got Pete Carroll. He got Russell Wilson. He got him playing at a high level. So,
how many years, sir, has it been since the Dolphins have been a playoff contender?
It's been several. But, again, a lot of it has been quarterback play.
Is it a decade?
Oh, it's been longer than that, and part of that is because of the level that the Patriots have played in that division. Because it sure hasn't been the Dolphins, Bills, or the Jets.
Yeah.
But again, I think they're fine at quarterback. Now you got to build around people, and that's what people don't understand about a guy like Gregson or some of these guys, masterminds in the front office, and to a certain extent, Bill Polian down through the years, able to evaluate and scout and find a guy that will fit your culture. He may not be the greatest player in the world, but you look at a guy like Belichick. He'll bring in guys that he knows he can coach, he can mold. And that's the key. And I think there's no more a better person organization than some of those guys at the top that can do that and do that at a high level where you can help your coach and help your organization and find some of those players. Because you're not all going to – first of all, you're not going to hit on all your great draft choices, much less – you know, the diamonds in the rough that you're going to have to try to develop. But if you can find those guys that can fit, you're ahead of the game.
Hey, guys, what's the future on the Pittsburgh Steelers? It looks like to me, and I know you can bring up individual games or
it looks like to me that their quarterback situation is tenable, not because he can't play, but because the injuries are starting to mount up. Where's that team going forward?
Being a Bengal fan, I hope that they just keep, you know, sinking further and further into the abyss.
I think they hung their hat on defense for all those years and had the quarterback, and I hate this term, that just managed the game. But when your defense starts getting injured, starts getting older, and you don't have that offense to help you, then you're in trouble. And the Steelers situation kind of fell apart. A guy like Bruce Arians is with the Colts. Really worked well with Ben Roethlisberger. This year they brought in Todd Haley, and he's been just a mess trying to work with Big Ben. I don't know if it's Haley's fault. I don't know if it's Big Ben's fault, but that's not working. And terrible situation. They may be better off to just try to gut that thing and get it, you know, down and then build it back up. Because again, they're muddled in that middle ground. You know, you're not going to draft really high, and you're not going to, you know, get the players you need from the draft. So, if the Steelers are in a, you know, an awkward situation that they often don't find themselves in.
Well, you know, I perusing the internet while we talk, and got on pigs.com and looked at our thread. We started there, and had someone that had something on there about Coach K. He didn't realize Coach K had been at WC, and I guess he was a sophomore the year they went to semi-state, and when Craig Neal was the leader, and he said, "My friends and I have always wondered how far we would have gone if Brian Stallman and Robert Norris had been on the Hatchet team that year."
Well, guys, I can turn that around and say, how far would have WC gone in those years if some of the kids that should have been at Washington Catholic were there? The WC kids, and I can tell you this, because when I went in there, there was a push by the Hatchets to come after some of our players. Ford was the new coach at Bennett New Albany, and Jack Ford came in, and he was going to try to get some of our players. And I met with every parent in the first week after getting that job at 22 years old to keep Kevin Stallman, Brian's brother, to keep Aaron Perdue, to keep Michael Burkhart, to keep those kids down at WC. My point is this. Every one of those kids at WC were WC homegrown players. They were not people who had been in the public school. So I can say the other thing, had those kids been over at WC, how much further would those teams have gone? But Washington, be happy that the Zellers moved in from Iowa or wherever they did, and you did a great job with them, and they all won a state championship.
Yeah, their basketball program is just fine. I mean, it has been. So that was a very well-stated point, Coach.
Thank you, Kurt. I'm happy to have somebody agree with me. Hey, I want to talk Indiana real quickly before we end this thing. Kurt, I got to tell you something. The Hoosiers are going to get better because they played some teams that have exposed some areas they need to work on. Do you have any concern, about Cole's not hitting the basket and how he approached shots, future shots in that game? And two, do you feel like Cody is a little lost on when he gets the ball with a defender on him on seeing where the next move is, the kick out or the drop step or the move? You know, he shot a jump hook on the baseline that went about 2 feet over the basket, and fortunately Superman Oladipo was there to pick that one up. I'm not saying he's not a great player. He is a great player. I'm not saying Hulls isn't going to hit again, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Again, they were the number one team in the country for 6 or 7 weeks, and you just look at some of those things and you want to get your thoughts on it. I just want to get your thoughts on them.
I'm not worried about Jordan Hulls. I mean, sometimes you just don't shoot well. I mean, if he wants to take 30 shots, I'm fine with that. Because again, good players, they'll find that, you know, they'll find their level. And I'm fine with Jordy Hulls. Sometimes you just don't shoot very well. It would bother you if they didn't have other guys that could take up that load when the shots don't fall, but they did. You mentioned Oladipo. You mentioned a guy like Zeller. He's always there. As far as Cody's concerned, it's just going to be a part of elevating his game. I mean, he's just a sophomore playing in his third semester of basketball on the college level. I'm not worried about his moves, so to speak. I'm more worried about him being in more command of the team, wanting to get the basketball more, and just being just trying to assert himself a little more. And that doesn't mean he's not playing hard, just be more of a presence out there, and I think that will come. But and part of the deal with Zeller, too, it's not every day that you play against size like that, especially in high school. Then on the college level, you don't match up with the guy on most nights that's at the same skill level and at the same height. And I was just kind of sort of laughing the other day about everybody wanted to jump off the bridge being an Indiana fan because you go to Iowa and you win the game. I mean, that would have been unbelievable 3 years ago to do that. And they need to remember back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you go on the road in the Big Ten, you get a win against a team that's coached well, like McCaffrey, and he's recruiting like crazy. They had some guys that can play for anybody right now. A couple of big kids inside. They've got a freshman point guard in Giselle who's going to be good. And I know Fran McCaffrey's going to be good because he's been with McLeod, and I know a lot of guys from Du Bois County know Fran really well, and they think that they're, you know, he thinks he's going to get it going in Iowa. And, I mean, they won in Iowa. I mean, they, you know, Michigan last night, they're not going to apologize for going to Northwestern and getting a win. Anytime you can win on the road, it's great. And I think Indiana fans, you know, they go from one extreme to the other. You know, we're horrible. We can't win. We're 6-28 to now thinking that they're the 86 Celtics and they got to win every game by 30 points.
Well, Kurt, that's why I asked, because you always bring some sanity back to the discussion. And when
really,
we look at Indiana, you're going to – we want Cody Zeller to make moves that he hasn't made before. He's going to fail once in a while. But winning on the road is critical. You brought up a good point. I told my son, Josh, and Scott, as we were watching that Iowa-IU game, I was shocked at the good young players on Iowa and shocked at the good young talent in the Big Ten overall. I mean, Iowa got out with that basketball, Kurt. They pushed that thing up. They played I'm not saying Iowa's never done that before, but they just look like they got some quality in young guys in those positions, just like IU, but like a lot of Big Ten teams.
I mean, you look down that schedule, and you tell me where it's going to be easy to go into somebody else's arena and blow somebody out. I mean, Michigan did last night because they played pretty well. Northwestern's got good young players, too, and it's tough to win on their own. And I'm just amazed at all these teams with these great players, and especially young guys like you talked about. I mean, Minnesota, they've got it going on. They've got Mbakwe, who's a veteran. But I don't know very many other guys on Minnesota's team other than watching them playing and being impressed. And that's how you build it. And, you know, back in the day, guys would be playing as third-year, fourth-year players, and you knew everybody on all those teams. And this is what we're getting to now because I'm telling you, the Big Ten with these coaches, I mean, that league is filled with great coaches. And these coaches not only can coach on the floor, they've got dynamic assistants, and they've got guys that can develop players, and they've got guys that can bring players in. And, and I don't know, you and Joe probably talked about it before, but hopefully he's happy with the way Purdue played the other night because they played well. They got back to being a Matt Painter-type coach team where they dug in and they stopped people because Illinois had good players too and Gross can coach too. So, it's just – I love Big Ten basketball, and there's no doubt that it's the best conference in the league – or the country right now.
All right, well, we're going to end this show. You've seen the rant. Joe just didn't have much to rant about. Real quickly, 2013 draft order in the NFL, Kansas City 1, Jacksonville 2, Oakland is 3, Philly 4, and Detroit 5, and Cleveland just trying to find something to turn that program around. We appreciate you, everybody, joining us. For Kurt, for Joe, we wish you a happy new year. Go out, watch some high school basketball, and enjoy what the young people do. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.